Because when you're sitting face to face with a group of executives and they are telling you there's no way this will work, that's not the most encouraging thing in the world.
I've specifically selected the sponsor for this podcast because of the role they play in assisting small business owners. We've talked about our admiration for Chase and JPMorgan Chase before, and they just released a new small business credit card, the all-new Chase Inc. Business Unlimited Credit Card. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase, no annual fee, and no minimum balance to redeem rewards, the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited Credit Card is a great choice for busy, creative entrepreneurs. When you're running a creative business, whether it's design, architecture, video, and everything in between, you wear a lot of hats. Keep things simple with the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited Credit Card issued by Chase Bank USA NA. For more information, visit chase.com/inc, I-N-K. Those of you guys who have been tuning into our show, we've often shared stories about really bad clients where those red flags go up. Clients that don't respect you, clients that are cheap, clients that micromanage and never say a good word about you. Well, in today's podcast, we have the opposite of that kind of client. We have what we call the dream client. The unicorn does exist, and I'm talking to Eli Cohen, founder of Saleshood today, and he is what I would consider a client of a lifetime. Now, full disclosure, not only is he a client, but now we've become friends. I feel like he's part of the family, and we're doing work together in so many different ways, so I just want to put that out there in case somebody is like wondering, hey, what is their strange relationship? Well, it's a deep one, and this is the kind of relationship you want to have with not just friends and family, but if possible, with clients. And so I just want to welcome and thank Eli Cohen for coming on the show today. Eli, how you doing?
Chris, I'm doing great. Good to be here. Much love, my friend.
So jumping in, I think I want to share a little story so that people have some context too. You've seen Eli on our show, on our YouTube channel before. He's talking about sales technique, and you're thinking like, well, who is this guy and how does he know this thing? And then who am I? And I've been sitting here sharing with you guys in very open and transparent ways what I know about sales. And I have to say, and I can count on one hand those influences, and Eli is definitely one of those fingers on my hand. And I learned terms that I never knew even existed before. Things like a compelling event, social prospecting, asking open-ended questions, and going through all this content. And of course, I'm talking about this platform, Saleshood, that you have, that you've created to help a lot of people out there with sales and to kind of give it some legitimacy. And I think that's part of the mission. And I love what you're doing. There's parallels between what you and I are doing. So let's get in this. You had, at some point in time, worked as an employee. Can you talk us a little bit about your work history and why you left that and then created your company, the company we're going to talk about a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, got to go way back in time for that one. You know, I'm from Toronto, so let's just do a little call out to Toronto, Canada.
What's up, Toronto?
What's up? And moved to the Valley, moved to Silicon Valley about 20 years ago. Worked at a startup, then worked at Oracle. And across that journey, I had always thought moving to the Valley, moving to Silicon Valley, I was going to start a company. I was going to, you know, I was going to build this next gen amazing technology company. Went to my first company, went to the second one, Oracle, and then went to Salesforce. It was a startup. It had just gone public. And it was, you know, it was a risky bet. You know, there was no tower on the San Francisco skyline as there is today. It wasn't a company that was $20-30 billion in run rate revenue. It was like, you know, we were a scrappy company. And I spent 8 years there, and, you know, a lot longer than I thought I would. And being there was amazing. It was energizing. Learned so much about cloud and software as a service and really what it took to be successful and to win a market, right? How do you crush a market? And we did that. And over the years, you know, I started thinking of ideas, you know, and you know, I'm not young, you know, I'm in my, you know, I'll be 47 in a couple weeks. And 5 years ago, I started thinking before I left Salesforce, you know, this is my time. This is my time to solve a big problem, to leave a legacy, to create something. You know, after 20 years of being in the workforce after being, you know, schooled by my father back in a furniture store and doing, you know, lawn cutting and landscaping businesses and just really going hard for years and years and years. I felt like I wanted to build something and create something and truly leave a legacy. And the legacy I believed was to help elevate the sales profession and to help companies and organizations and cultures really improve the productivity of their teams and be the best they can be. And you know, that was the original idea, you know, back in early 2013 when we founded the company.
It's was amazing. That vision clear to you as you were making that transition?
You know, I had the vision probably about 6 months before I left. And, you know, the vision was more about the outcome. I knew the problem I wanted to solve. I didn't have clarity around the mechanics of how we were going to solve the problem. And, you know, after I left, I was able to decompress a little bit and spend some time reflecting on my experience. And, you know, I actually, the first 6 months after I left, I wrote my first book. And the first book was all about helping companies build the right sales culture, helping companies build the right sales coaching culture. And, you know, the first book was called Saleshood. And I'm going to tell you a story, you know, about 2 months after I left, you know, I was bouncing around a whole bunch of different names and ideas for the execution of the vision. And I stumbled on an old email folder from all the gratitude emails from years and years of doing great work at Salesforce. You know, these are all the salespeople, the sales managers, these are all the sales leaders, like everyone, everybody that was touched by my team and I, because we helped them by getting them to be the best they can be, because we trained them, we coached them. And so like 1,000+ emails. And in this folder of gratitude, I started reading sentences like, thank you for making me great. Thank you for helping me be better. Thank you for connecting me with the best. Thank you for connecting me with the winning plays. Thank you for helping me win. Thank you for helping me not lose. Like I saw all this, and then I realized that the real secret sauce of what we did during Salesforce's hypergrowth years was connecting salespeople with each other. And we did it through coaching, through storytelling, but we did it with people. Like I had 120 people on my team. And so, you know, that was my moment. I realized, wow. So what we're actually building is this platform that is going to connect people through storytelling, through shared experiences, and using you know, the mobile phone with video and social learning, where people can give each other feedback and data to help people get connected with the best ideas, with knowledge, right? And so sharing knowledge at scale is the ultimate outcome. And we knew that was what I wanted. We knew that's what we wanted to create as a business. And so there I am. I remember I was sitting on a train from Vancouver to Seattle. I was speaking at a conference, and so I'm writing down all these words as I'm reading the emails. I'm like, okay, I need a name. Like I can picture it. I can see what this thing is. You know, people are recording their stories. They're scoring each other. They're giving each other feedback. Companies are doing this at scale. Like it was so clear, but I didn't have a name. And so I used the words from the emails and I kind of word patterned it. And I ended up with this, like, you know, vision of a connected universe. You know, for those Star Trek geeks out there, I literally started at the Borg, but then I thought, okay, the Borg, that's not good. You know, that's got negative. And then I ended up kind of more on the Zen Buddha, but like I felt like, you know, sales Zen or sales Buddha was overdone. And I literally landed on this word called selfhood. And I'm like, selfhood? Huh, exactly. The fully developed person, one with nature, one with themselves. You know, like Zen, like Om. And I thought, wow, what's the fully developed salesperson? What's the fully developed sales culture? What's the fully developed sales team? I'm like, Saleshood. Of course it is. And you know, the best part about the story is that the URL was available. March 13th, 2013. Who would have thought saleshood.com, not some .ai, not some .whatever, .com was available. That's the universe saying, go make it happen.
So you're on this train, and it's so clear in your mind, this vision. What year is this? Because we all know, everybody's got an idea. The real work is actually making that idea come to life, come to fruition. So what year are we now?
So I left Salesforce early January 2013. Okay. So 2013, March 2013 was the date that I was on that train. And, you know, that's the registration date of the URL. And you know, met my co-founder, Arthur Doe. You know, there's the deep relationship, your brother, and we met, and we, you know, he immediately listened to the story and said, let's do this. And by September 2013, we had our first, you know, maybe it was somewhere between 50 and 100 salespeople, about 10 teams that were logging into Saleshood, and they were collaborating, they were learning from each other, and they were becoming better salespeople together as a team. And that was the premise: share stories, learn together, and do it in a structured way, and then, you know, you will be great.
And I'm trying to kind of envision this story through the lens of our audience, or maybe an entrepreneur or CEO who's got that same idea, who's got that same clarity that you have in that one moment in time. And then that moment passes them by and they miss out on that opportunity. Could you give somebody who's got this idea that's as clear to them and as passionate as you are about this, about on a mission, about connecting the universe? And I like the Borg, by the way.
Yes.
So I'm a CEO. I'm sitting on my plane, my car, my train, whatever it is, and I've got this idea. Can you give me some advice? Like, can you make it a little bit more tactical? Like, how do you get funding? How do you align stakeholders? How do you find a partner or a developer or whoever it is to help you bring this together? Because we know it's not a solo effort.
You know, I think the first piece of advice is, you know, if you believe in it and you're passionate about it, you got to do it. You know, over the years, I had ideas that timing wasn't right. And, you know, no regrets, but this one was right. And, you know, the specific steps that we took and, you know, that I initially took was, you know, once I had the idea, like I knew I needed a URL. Like just my gut told me I needed a URL, everything about me. And once I had that URL, all of a sudden people were like, oh, I know what you're doing. And so I didn't need to explain it as much anymore. And so that was, you know, getting the name and having having kind of just rallying around that. But the very first thing I did, there are two things I did, right? Three things. So the first thing I did was I started writing down, you know, kind of the plan, right? I thought, okay, this is a world of venture capitals, and let's build a deck and let's raise some money. That's kind of what I thought needed to happen. And so I started working on a deck, and I, you know, kind of connected with a few folks, got some mentorship from people, and started sharing kind of the business plan, the vision. And that was number one. And each person told me, great idea. Oh my God, no one's doing it. Who's your, the folks that know me and know my history, they would say, who's your Parker? And Parker, the implication there is, you know, Mark Benioff is the CEO of Salesforce. He co-founded the company with Parker Harris, who's his chief technology officer. And so they said, who's the technologist that's gonna build this for you? Because you've got the vision and that ain't your skill. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. I need a technology partner. And so I started down that path. And then at the same time, I started recruiting customers. And so I remember when, and I basically prioritized, you know, what I needed to do. Building the deck was interesting, but I didn't spend months and months building a business plan because I basically knew, wow, the most important thing right now is finding a technology partner who can execute the vision. Without that partner, this never would have happened. And Arthur and I are true partners. And so then I started, you know, interviewing. And I met a whole bunch of different technologists over a 30-day window of time. You know, I probably spoke to at least, you know, 20 to 30 different people. I was even starting to talk to firms. I was even starting to think like, okay, maybe I got to hire an agency or a company, an outsource firm to kind of do this because I could feel it. I wanted to make this happen. And, you know, and I was being coached on what to look for, the kind of questions to ask. And, you know, what became apparent to me was, you know, some of the coaching I got on the partner was, you know, figure out what their stack is, figure out what their vision is for the infrastructure. And you know, so I found myself in boardrooms and in, you know, drinking a lot of coffee and meeting a lot of people, having these like deep, you know, multi-layer architecture conversations. And it was just like, you know, I'm like, I have a vision. I want to execute the vision. Just kind of help me get there. And, you know, and then we were kind of, there's friction and there was, and I could tell, right? I remember when I sat down with Arthur and, you know, he's my co-founder, CTO, and we're sitting face to face. And I remember the spot where we met and, you know, tea, coffee, and it was late afternoon. And, you know, he heard the vision, the name, and he's like, hey, this is great. I like it. And I told him the Salesforce story. He's like, okay, no one's doing it. And then I said, so tell me, you know, what's the stack going to look like? What's the infrastructure going to look like? And he looked at me and he said, why do you care? That's my job.
Mm.
Boom. I knew I found my match right there. You know, clear division of responsibility. You know, he owns the infrastructure, the technology stack, and I was responsible for getting customers and making them successful. And, you know, in the early days, it was Arthur, myself, and a few developers. And we were very focused on just kind of what we needed to do right now. You know, for me and for someone who has a vision or an idea, just to kind of wind this down, you have a big vision and a big idea, but focus on what are the most important things that need to get done right now to move you to the next milestone. And for me, the next specific milestone was, you know, some kind of beta program with a small group of people. I had the people, you know, and the funding wasn't really the issue. I kind of felt like we would do that later, but I needed the technologists. So I dropped everything I was doing and just did that. And so focus and just do what you need to do to get it done and to get done what you need done right now, right? 5 years later, you know, the types of conversations Arthur and I are having are, you know, very different.
Well, congratulations. And I do want to recap some of the points that you made here for our fans and our community here. Some of the advice you have for aspiring entrepreneurs or somebody who wants to launch their own business. I think the first thing that you said was do something to make it feel real. For you, it was getting your URL and getting a name, and the name crystallized the idea. It gave form or shape to the vision, because otherwise it's like this puffy cloud. And I think the name is brilliant in that you can share it with somebody and they immediately get it. Versus some crazy abstract name that you'd have to sit there and explain it to them. So by making it real, you took the very first and most important step towards achieving that thing. You mentioned about writing a business plan, which is the playbook that everybody goes by. But once you realize like maybe it wasn't all about that, that you needed to find a partner, somebody who shared your vision, somebody who would not only believe in the vision, but somebody who could possibly hold their own with you to challenge you at times when needed, but to be a true partner in that sense, that makes perfect sense to me. Fantastic. So now
then,
I don't want
to. And then customers. And then. Mm-hmm.
And
then,
customers, I'm sorry.
And customers.
Spoken like a true business person. Right.
Yes.
Spoken like a true business person, before the platform is built, you're already looking for customers. And that's a very valuable lesson, because most creative types, people that are going to be listening to this podcast, are going to be running around trying to, they're going to build something for 3.5 years and not have any validation whatsoever. And so then their thing hits with a thud.
Yeah.
So can you speak a little bit more about the mentality or why you were looking for customers and what that meant to you?
Well, it meant instant validation, number one, credibility. But more importantly, while the idea was interesting and the idea was differentiated, and, you know, Arthur and I were able to accelerate development because I'd had 8 years of experience, you know, doing the coaching and the training and the onboarding and all the enablement, right? The connecting salespeople, like we built a business around everything I was doing for 8 years, right? That's an important point that I think we got to make sure is clear to everyone. But this idea of getting customers, because, you know, we built, and what Arthur did beautifully was, you know, we didn't build the whole vision. We ended up just building kind of one core use case. We took that core use case from end to end, and then we had, you know, about 100 people that ran through it with us. And so that's why we needed customers. We needed paying customers. They had to be paying because they had to have skin in the game. Paying customers that said, yeah, what you're doing is valuable enough for us to pay something. I didn't care how much it was. They had to pay something, and they had to sign a commercial agreement. And it was, you know, they could opt out whenever they wanted. Like, I didn't care, but just something, just to like, come on, we're doing this. And you know what? They would then give us legitimate, real feedback so we could take the hypothesis and take our ideas, which is kind of, you know, it's an idea, but until someone uses it. And so you asked me a question at the very beginning. You said, how different is the vision from where you are, right? The problem we're solving is the same. The execution has changed because we've always had customer feedback every step of the way. We never built things in a silo. We always develop things in partnership with our customers and with companies, solving real problems. And that's ultimately what Saleshood started with. You know, we wanted to solve real problems for companies, real revenue problems. And so, you know, have a plan, make sure you got the right team in place, and then make sure that you are, you know, surrounding yourself with paying customers to, you know, kind of to make sure you're on track and you're solving real problems. Otherwise, you know, it's why you're doing it. We did not spend too much time with the 5-year business forecast, and because we didn't know, right? Like, we're just like, let's get 100 people using it. If they all log in and they all sign off and say that was valuable to me, and if the system works, and if we can track that they watch the videos and that they can answer a question, and that that happens without anything going crazy, home run, right? Small goals. Like, now we're clearly, you know, kind of, you know, doing data analysis, and we've got like a whole, anyway, we'll get there. But yeah, that's small goals.
Take me back to year one. This is the make or break year. And when I'm reading a comic book story, it's nice to know where Daredevil is today. But year one, where he's just barely learning how to fight and Stick is whacking him in the head, and he's still getting a sense of his superpower. What were some of the challenges? What are the lessons that you had to learn?
It was mostly just Arthur and I, you know, in a room probably the size of this, you know, podcast space. I think the biggest lesson was we were charting new territory. We were clearly on the forefront of a new idea. And, you know, people said that you needed to raise money. And so I'm like, okay, we got to raise money. So I spent a lot of time going up and down the valley talking to VCs. And you know, in hindsight, while that was interesting, I think the story wasn't clear enough. We didn't have enough proof points, and we probably should have kept it cooking for a while longer before we spread the story. And so I think that was a big lesson, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, just keep focusing, keep building, and, you know, spend less time kind of pitching and trying to raise money. Just prove the value. I think the other thing was, you know, the ups and downs of a first year and the highs and lows. You know, I think the big lesson for me was without a partner, I don't know if I would have been able to survive the ups and the downs. When I mean survive, I mean kind of keep going, staying at it, and it's hard. And so for that, I'm super grateful.
Fantastic. Okay, so moving towards today, 5 years out, 200% growth, high retention, amazing results. What is the complexion of the company today, and how are you managing all this stuff? Give us some CEO advice.
CEO advice. Yeah. We're 50 people now.
Wow.
And, you know, we're downtown San Francisco, Jackson Square. I think CEO advice number one, you know, I'm a believer in radical transparency. So communicate. Share how things are working. Share the good, share the bad, be open, be transparent. Let everybody get visibility into what needs to happen, right? I learned this from Benioff at Salesforce, right? Alignment was critical. My whole platform, our whole platform, Salesforce, is all about alignment. Let's get everybody on message. Let's get everybody learning from each other. Let's get everybody aligned on what's most important. And let's check and make sure. As a CEO, number one on the priority list. You know, let's make sure that everybody has complete visibility into what's going on. So, you know, hosting, we do weekly team check-ins. right? So every Monday, bring the team together, and it's a great opportunity for everybody to share. And we do it structured, right? We actually use Sales It for it, and everybody shares gratitude. So they are, you know, sharing what are they grateful for, what are some updates. Sometimes folks will record videos about what some stories that are going on, some things that are happening, and then everybody, you know, kind of puts in their goals and successes for the week. So we're all laser sharp focused on what's most important.
Yeah, I remember you sharing this with me last time I was in your office about these 1 hour weekly check-ins, and that you have a structure that's really important, something that I'm going to need to learn from this, and that you start with a gratitude. And I like that. It kind of frames your mind in the conversation to be optimistic and happy about the things that we've done, so it's not totally negative. And then you have people do updates, and then tell me a little bit about what a goal might sound like for a week. And if they're sharing successes, is that from last week?
Yeah, since it's so a Monday? You know, okay. we're doing a Monday meeting, yeah. And you know, the gratitude is always flowing here. I think we do a lot of, you know, we've got something in Sales Suite called stories. And so there are recognition videos. So you can basically pick someone and record, you know, so 1 year anniversary recognition videos happen. And, you know, if someone gets an assist from someone, they'll recognize their help, whether it's support thanking sales or sales thanking support. There's a lot of cross team gratitude going on. Oh, it's great. I think, you know, so since this is a Monday morning, the goals are upcoming. So what are my goals for the next 5 days? And then the successes, or what were the successes from the last week? And mm-hmm. folks are keying this in the system, and they're doing it on the Sunday night, Monday morning before the call. And so you see all the answers. And so folks can add commentary to it. So personally, because I'm hosting the team check-in virtually in the app, and then literally as a group, and I've got a distributed team. So I got folks in St. Louis and Denver and Atlanta, up in Toronto, LA. So we're spread, you know, folks will key stuff in, and I'll get a sense. And I think this is the most important point for me as a CEO. I'll walk into the team check-in, and I'll have a good sense based on everybody's submissions, kind of where we're at and where people are focused on. So I get an instant sentiment of what people are thinking they got to work on for the week, so I can quickly adjust. I can mm-hmm. quickly help folks course correct, and like, you know, what are you thinking about? And you know, well, what did you think about this? And so I can ask a couple questions. I can drill down on something at the team level, at the company level. And that's really been impactful. Goals, successes, challenges is another structured question we have people key in, and what's new, just like what's new. And that's it. I think the team check-in's great. And when we work with other companies, you know, you can imagine Sales Suite is all about sales training and sales coaching, but it's all about sharing content and getting just-in-time prescriptive sales tools. And you can imagine what that is, because that's what Sales Suite is. But this idea of a team check-in and prescriptive coaching from manager to rep, you know, these are ideas that extend beyond just sales. And so a lot of our companies, why we've got high retention and why companies love the hood is because, you know, these principles of micro learning, peer-to-peer coaching, bite-sized content, structured team-based gratitude, structured team-based goals. This is a universal truth across the enterprise. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I believe we've evolved into kind of this future of work platform that is ultimately helping companies be better at what they can do. And I think, but still, remember, still staying super laser sharp focused on our vision. You know, I think, you know, we have a lot more growth before we can, you know, kind of leave our roots and the primary driver of success, which is core sales value and sales productivity.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard, You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is a great idea, and you're using your own platform to organize this, where people submit their videos and their goals and their challenges the night before, so you as their manager can look at and get a really quick snapshot about how this conversation is going to go on Monday, right?
Yeah.
And then you can course correct anybody.
We have a ton of companies and a ton of teams that they go into our library and they can take the team. It's called the team check-in, and they can literally schedule the team check-in. It automatically assigns it to their team. They can set it on autopilot. And this is kind of the beauty of automation. And it basically is like a Groundhog Day style recurring meeting that just happens, and it archives it and everything. And it's a beautiful thing. And so now we've left the world of kind of sales coaching, sales training, sales content. We've entered the world of, you know, getting our leaders to be better leaders, getting our employees to be more engaged, giving our employees a voice. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Okay, I can tell, and if you can't tell by listening to us or watching this, Eli, his brain is moving very fast. He's able to retell these things and not miss a beat. So a guy whose mind is moving that fast, Eli, I have to ask you this question. A lot of people in our community need help with this, is how do you stay focused and productive? Because it's like, oh, squirrel, and everything seems super exciting. What are your tricks to kind of be able to get productive and focus?
It's hard, right? I think, I set personal goals, and I've got goals for the week. I've got goals for the day. Sometimes I'll have, you know, AM goals, PM goals. I've got clear revenue goals that are monthly, quarterly, annually. And, you know, I have become better at saying no. I have become better at being able to prioritize what are the things that will make a difference today. But that's hard. I also am very efficient with my time, and so, for example, you know, writing the book, folks are like, how'd you write the book when you're CEO running a company, you know? But when you have an idea, and you know, so I started writing, and people will notice that my writing over the last 12 months, I was doing a lot more blogging and I was doing a lot more tweeting. So I basically would use tactics in my day-to-day, and I would kind of double them up. And so tweeting ideas, blogging ideas, posting things on LinkedIn as a CEO, I would see which ideas would kind of bubble up. And so, things that people liked more, things that people shared more, you know, that would ultimately fuel kind of my writing, and then the writing would fuel some of the strategy on the platform, and then, you know, the ideas would flow from customers. So I basically made it all kind of one. And so, you know, we've got a vision for success here at Saleshood, and the vision for success is the goals are clear, our strategies are clear. We do an annual. So I learned from Mark Benioff at Salesforce. We used to do a V2 MOM. It's an acronym: vision, values, method, obstacles, and measures. And, you know, here at the company, we have quarterly V2 MOM experience where myself and my leadership team will document our vision, values, methods, obstacles, and measures. And you can Google it, V2 MOM. There's a ton of writing about it. Tony Robbins talks about it as well. And there are many of us who left Salesforce who embrace V2 MOM and use it as leadership, because it's a great way to align on business goals and on vision. And so having clarity of a vision, documenting the vision, getting alignment for the team on vision, and then just being, you know, really, really, you know, disciplined and, you know, ruthless about saying no. And I think I've gotten a lot better at it. But I say no, and it's always no. I can't do it right now. There's an explanation, and there's always an offer with a specific question around how can I help you.
Right.
You know, I read that from Maynard Webb, who used to be on the board at Salesforce, and he wrote an article in Forbes or Inc. where he actually said, Here's how I say no. I'm very busy. And so, for example, someone asked me a question and, you know, they ask, oh, I'd love to have coffee. You know, everybody wants to have coffee. And I'd love to have coffee, too. But I can't have coffee with everyone. And so, you know, I'm swamped for the next 30 days. But if there's something specific I can help you with or an introduction I can make, let me know. And, you know, sometimes a question comes back, usually not. But I put it out there. Mm-hmm. And because I do want to help. And a simple intro, I can make that happen. You know, the other thing that I do is I've been running a lot lately. And so in this past 6 to 8 months while I've been writing, the running helps, right? So, you know, wake up early, do a run, and I'll take an idea, put it in my head before the run. And that idea, when I'm done running, will be completely thought through, executed in my head. I'll have a clear game plan. And then I'll write it out, whether it's a chapter in a book, whether it's a deck I got to build for a customer presentation, whether it's a deck I got to build for, you know, a board meeting. But I can get that storyline down. And that's pretty much how I think through things. You know, what's the story I'm trying to tell? I build the story arc and I kind of just write it down and then boom, I got the story. And then once I've got the story, you know, fill in the blanks is easy. So anyway, hopefully these tips are useful for folks. These are some of the things I do as a CEO. Mm-hmm.
I got a question for you. You're the first person that I've heard to say this, that you have an AM goal and a PM goal. So take me through just in a snapshot, what is a typical day, a non-Monday morning meeting day for you?
Right.
Where this is kind of like, what time do you get up? When do you run? Just give me the highlights of what a day is, snapshot.
Okay, so on a day where I don't wake up at 2 because I can't sleep. Let's do which happened a couple times this week. And I try hard not to send emails at like 3-4 in the morning. But, you know, until Gmail gets a scheduled feature, it's just... You know, it's the way it is. Sorry. Okay, so let's pretend 5 a.m. is the normal, natural wake up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think at that point in time, you know, my wife and I will wake up around the same time, and the kids are still sleeping. So there's, you know, time for us to just connect, sync on a few things. And then, you know, at that point in time, I'll just do a quick check. I'll turn work on. I'll do a quick check on a few things, make sure nothing's gone on, and then you know, some mornings I'll then do a quick meditation, and then from there I'm up, and then you know, I'd say half of the mornings on a given week I will running shoes, and you know, my brain is already racing a little bit. I'm thinking about what's the day. I've looked at the calendar. You know, what are the first things I got to deal with, and what's important, and then, you know, do the run. Sometimes if I have a 6 a.m. call scheduled or a 7 a.m. call scheduled, which happens the other half, you know, there's no run. But those morning calls are scheduled, and it's scheduled mm-hmm. to folks in Europe or sometimes on the East Coast. You know, meetings for me are things like, well, there's customer meetings where I'm meeting with executives. We're talking about the strategies of their businesses, and you know, they want to do updates on how things are going. I've got meetings with customers. I've got meetings with prospects. So that's a good portion of my day. Is that you know, I have so you know, it's a busy morning, and it's you know. I come back and it's you know, shower, coffee, and you know, I'll do an espresso before the shower, and then you know, 7:30, you know, kids are up, we're running around, we're hanging out a little bit, and then you know, I'm trying to get at work by 8, and it's easy for me, you know, live in the city, it's a short commute, and then usually there's back to back meetings from about 9 until about 4 or 5. So that early morning time is important to just kind of tidy up any loose ends. And you know, for example, this morning, you know, we had a meeting at 9, and so from about 6:30 to 7:30, I was back and forth calls with the sales director who was responsible for that, and with someone that was helping with some of the setups for something. And so we were back and forth. They had actually recorded their meeting dry runs the night before, so I had watched them, and so this is how we're being efficient, and you know, that's and so when I say there's like a morning goal, like there's something I'm gonna do that isn't scheduled that mm-hmm. that will drive me nuts if I don't do. And and you know, there's a long list of to-dos. Right. So I'll look at that list and like, okay, there's one thing. There's a follow-up item with a board member, or there's something. To me, I just like to, you know, it's like making the bed in the morning. It's just something small. So outside of my regular day of accomplishments, you know, there's a couple coffees in the morning, you know, and that's it is, you know, I like my espresso. And where else do I take you? You know, I think, you know, lunch is usually a something do with someone. You know, I think either it's a group or I'd like to schedule lunch with people. I like to do that. Mm-hmm. And then boom, there's more meetings. You know, I'm doing webinars. Wow. I'm doing meeting preps. I'm doing, you know, there's planning meetings for speaking gigs that I'm doing. You know, I think, you know, we'll do pipeline review meetings. We'll do deal review meetings, internal meetings. You know, the best meetings though are the ones where we're talking with customers and you know, listening to them about their problems. And I think, you know, I'll get, you know, random texts from my board. And so that'll be an insertion in the day where, you know, hey, I want to ask you a question about something. So I have a very active board. They're providing us with a lot of feedback all the time.
So when do you start to wind down from your office hours? Now, this is no joke. This is like the Army slogan, like where you do more before 9 a.m. than most people do all day. Because when you're describing your day, I was like, okay, he's at 1 o'clock. He must have skipped lunch. But you're like, so that's 6:30 now. And people are still in bed at that time. You are just slamming through stuff. This is incredible.
So I walk a lot. So I walk from home to BART, and that's a, you know, about a 12 to 14 minute walk with an espresso stop. And, and you know, and so I'm either doing a call or I'm thinking through something just like I would do on a run. If I'm on a call, sometimes I'll and BART is the Bay Area transit system, road transit system and rapid transit. So if I'm on a call, I'll just go to the next station. So I'll walk. So like,
I see.
So that way I can keep going. I like that. It's like a double dip for the day with exercise.
That's a triple dip. Because in a way, you're getting your coffee, you're getting your exercise, you're doing your call, and you're kind of meditating at the same time, right? I guess that's how you're so productive.
And then I walk back from Montgomery to the office. So I got these walks that let me do things and talk.
I see.
And then, you know, when a meeting ends, you know, I'm very, you know, disciplined on, you know, summary notes, meeting thank yous and handwritten thank you cards. So when I've got downtimes, I'm writing those kind of stuff, getting it out. You know, so the back end of the day is the part that I love. So I've been a lot better at getting home for dinner with the kids. I think they have a lot more to share now about school. You know, they're getting older and it's super fun. And but when they go down, you know, I've got another 3 to 4 hour window. And and so, you know, from 8-ish until 12, you know, I'm cranking. Mm-hmm. That's no calls are scheduled, and I'm just executing.
Eli does more before 9 a.m. than most of you do the entire day. I'm so impressed with this because when you're running a business, there are so many things that need your attention. Business owners need to focus on growing their businesses, not their business credit card. There's something else that you had said earlier. I just want to talk about this for a half a second, or at least just to point out, because you've already articulated this, but I want to point out for our audience and the community is that you do a lot of listening. I hear this theme, and it's recurring. So when you're shaping your product, you had a vision, but you weren't so stubborn or concrete in what it's going to be like that the community, your customers, helped to shape it. And that's amazing. And that's coming from, I think, the Silicon Valley world, that kind of mindset, where you're listening and you're iterating and you're just constantly improving the product. And that's fantastic. And where it also relates to your content strategy is, and I see this a lot too, because I'm following you on Twitter, right? That you're posting little tweets and it's like you're fishing. There's a little bait that's out there and it gets devoured. And you're like, I'll turn that to a medium form blog post. And a couple of those hit and then that becomes something longer, or maybe it becomes a video or something you can do a webinar on. And then ultimately, it's a book. It's right there. It's all been pre-validated and confirmed that this is kind of the stickiest content that you're making.
Yeah.
So that's another tip for anybody that wants to do this.
I think, I get good feedback that I'm a good sharer. I share a lot, and the content that I am sharing, that we are sharing, is coming from real life experiences. And so, like, you know, if I talk to three companies in a morning, like, and I hear the same thing, okay, there's something going on right now.
Right,
like,
right.
I have three companies, they're all sharing the same thing. And so I am continuously looking for patterns in what people are saying. I'm looking for patterns in what's going on in the business. I'm looking for patterns in our culture, just to kind of, you know, adjust and to kind of keep things moving along in the right direction.
Right.
And, you know, I think, I don't know where that came from, to be honest. It's just, I noticed it at Salesforce when I was there, and it's heightened here just because I'm super, super, you know, plugged in. I think just look for patterns, because those are the problems that we can solve, or those are the places that we go to add value and to make things better and to amplify, right? I love amplifying things.
I try and coach our community to try to discover what their superpower is. And just by listening to you talk, I think I know what your superpower is. You are, I think maybe above all else, a really human-centered person. You value relationships, old-fashioned ways of saying hello, goodbye, being grateful. And you're able to connect in ways that I think only a very rare few people are able to do. Now, you're using a lot of technology and productivity tools along the way to do that. And your idea of using video to sync up with people, where people can share their wins, their success, their challenges, their goals, and that's pretty cool, because that allows us to all to work remotely but sync up in time in a way that is most convenient for everybody. I don't do that enough, and you're making me think about that more. You know Jose, who's my former business partner, he used to do that all the time. He would give the creative brief in video because it made a lot more sense than to try to write a long email where things get lost in translation. So you're not only, it's like you're the president of the hair club, where you're not only the president, but you're also the client. You're using Saleshood, and you're a big evangelist for it because you actually believe in it. It's not like, I got an idea to make a quick buck.
I think I wanted to give CEOs, I got it. So so let me give another piece of advice. I think especially folks that want to build technology, you know, you need to use the technology that you are building, and you need to be the best example of it. You know, when we were doing this at Salesforce, when we would sit down and sell the Salesforce CRM system, the way that we trained and coached our sales teams was we would have them show their prospects and their buyers a day in the life of how I, as a seller at Salesforce, use Salesforce. Because guess what? Their competitors, our competitors at the time, Oracle, Microsoft, all these big companies, nobody really used the tech. So we could actually show people that we used the tech. And it's a big differentiator, right? And so today, this morning, we're on a call with a prospect to call the customer. And, you know, the whole focus of the call is about solving their content management needs. And you know what? You could spend days and days building a pseudo demo, custom scenario, or, you know what? Just show them what you're made of. Show them your library. And so our sales director and our team crafted a scenario showing our own system. Here's how we use content management. Here's how our teams get productive. Here's how our teams are sharing, you know, their content. Here's how Eli, our CEO, excuse me for talking myself in the third person, records his tips and tricks, and then it's the videos are automatically tagged and they show up in context to our teams. Like, it blows people away. And so that's a big lesson for CEOs. You need to be the best example of the technology that you are that you are creating and you're bringing to market, because if you're not, then people aren't going to subscribe to what you want to do, and you, the passion needs to ooze out of the connection between you and the tech, and that's how you win. And you know, I get a lot of feedback from many heads of sales and customers who say it's just really cool how you use the app, and you're teaching us how to use it by showing us how you use it. it's like this meta of enablement, I'm pushing the envelope, right? You know, we ran an exercise where we had everybody at our company share, you know, we asked them a bunch of questions about culture. You know, what does culture mean to you, and what are some of your values, and you know, we gave them some structured questions, and then everybody answered the questions. Well, we used Salesforce for that, right? You can answer the questions, you can give each other feedback, you can score each other's answers, and you can crowdsource values and culture very quickly. And I was on the call with a company, a customer of ours, SHI, and I was speaking to the chief people officer, Phil Wilhelm, and I said, check out what we did. He goes, oh my God, I'm spending weeks and months interviewing people. You know, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but like I could totally short circuit the whole process by just kind of creating this experience with my team. So, you know, to your point, I embrace it. It needs to be, you know, it needs to be used. It needs to be embraced, and you need to be the best example of what it is that you're creating and bringing to market. You live that, you know, look at your website, you know, look at everything you stand for, look at how you do social media, social marketing, like everything you do, you know, is the best in that, and you're leading the way, and that's why people follow you.
I'm glad you pointed that out, your story, not mine, in that there is no better way to learn than to be immersed in the thing that you're doing. It seems obvious, but I guess not enough people do this. So when you're using your own tools, your platform, you can see where it breaks. You can see how to improve it. You can see if it's lagging, or the transcription service is too wonky, or no, we need a transcription service now, and this is how we have to use the tags, or how we're able to share it much easier. So the last little question I have for you is about money, because we know that dreams don't run on just hopes. Or companies don't just run on dreams and hope. Okay, let me rephrase that. And you need capital to make your company go and grow. And I'm just curious about how you assess capital. How do you choose which tools to use? How do you manage all that you have to do? I'm not talking about productivity. I'm just talking about money and runway and revenue.
You know, you asked the question a while ago, what lessons from our first year? I think the lessons from years 1 through 5 is you know, run a responsible business. And, you know, we run a responsible business with a very scrappy set of values. And, you know, decisions on investments are not taken lightly. And whether it's a website overhaul, whether it's hiring more salespeople, whether it's adding more developers, whether it's, you know, adding an experienced, you know, support leader, whether it's adding product manager 1 or product manager 2, like these are big decisions, each one. And Arthur and I are continuously evaluating and reevaluating the business because we've grown it organically. We've bootstrapped the company. We haven't raised a lot of money. We did a small seed round with an amazing executive that we wanted to partner with. He turns out he's Mark Benioff's best friend. He believes in the vision of kind of the future of work. Believes in productivity and what we're doing. And you know, we meeting of the minds. And you know, he wanted to come to our board. And so he invested some money. We did a seed round. It's public information. $1.8 million in seed. Over 5 years. You know, it's not a lot of money, right? So we're hugely capital efficient. And literally when we do speak to VCs or equity firms, just as we explore kind of different strategies for growth, when they look at our numbers, like we think there's a comma missing, you know, like the numbers are off because they just can't believe how we've gotten to this level. Like most people will invest, you know, 10x what we've invested in terms of financing to get a quarter of the revenue that we have. We've completely flipped the model. I think, you know, we continue to grow. I think many, many, many CEOs in the Valley, many, 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 many people that are leading technology companies, I get told this a lot from peers, wish that they were in this spot, because ultimately, because we've been scrappy, because we make the decisions around how to invest, and because we're managing this very closely, and we are, is what ends up happening is we have options. And when I say options, I mean, we have options. We can keep growing at our clip, and we can invest and grow at a certain pace, or we can partner with the right growth financing partner and accelerate this thing. But I think that's where we are right now. I'm sharing a little bit. We're at that phase now. We're like, we've great growth, great churn numbers, great NPS. We're and the market is exploding, right? We believe enablement automation and enablement management and this whole sales enablement space is exploding, and at the same time it's gonna start consolidating. And so as we look at the market, we're making some decisions around, so what does that in 2 years from now, what does that consolidation look like? And what do we need to put in place to make sure that we're the one consolidating and not being consolidated?
We know small business owners need multiple sources of capital. As you grow, you need a business credit card that will help you manage your expense and cash flow, but one that won't complicate your business. It's important to choose the right products, tools, and partners to keep it simple and keep your company financially healthy. There's something you mentioned. This is my last follow-up question here, is about getting report, having visibility on your finances. This is something I'm going to get chastised for this, that I hate looking at the numbers myself, but through some coaching, it's like, I need to know what my revenue is. I need to know what my burn rate is. I'm just curious, how do you look at those numbers? Is it somebody generates a report from you, from your financials, or do you have some kind of super crazy system that I need to know more about?
You know what? The super crazy system is Eileen, and she's incredible. So Eileen puts together all the data, and then we sit down once or twice a month, and I'm looking at balance sheet, I'm looking at P&L, I'm looking at accounts receivable, I'm looking at a list of our accounts, I'm looking at revenue by customer, I'm looking at net churn, gross churn, and so looking at growth year over year, month over month, and she makes it easy. We had to sync on what data was important, and then I report monthly to our investors, the small number of investors that we have and our advisors. You get those monthly reports, and then I do a quarterly board meeting where we do a deep dive on the P&L and the financial statements, we're running it lean. I think having a person that you trust that can organize the information, it lives in a system, and QuickBooks, Quicken, whatever that is that we're using. Mm-hmm. Arthur, he told me at the very beginning, why do you care what the infrastructure is? Same here, right? It doesn't matter. I'm a CEO, and I need a summary of information presented to me in a way that lets me look at it, make some decisions, and then we can decide A or B in terms of what we're going to do to continue to move the needle forward with the business. Mm-hmm. I actually love getting those summary reports because I can look at the bottom line and there's a groove now, right? So basically, like, we'll sit down how do we do? She'll go, I could tell where the smile is and the thumbs up or thumbs down. And listen, sometimes we spend a little too much it's got to come down the next month but listen, in a SaaS business, software as a service, here's a beautiful thing. Our customers are on an annual subscription. So every year, these contracts come up for renewal. So for us, the bigger contracts, the longer contracts, gives us a much more predictable business. And that's where we are now. We're doing 3-year contracts with customers, and it just lets us have a little bit more freedom to invest and grow and not be as tied to the month to month.
I was going to make a joke earlier when you said Eileen. So people are typing in searching Eileen.com right now. Eileen's a person. Eileen. I have Jessie, my wife, who helps take the foot off the gas pedal a little bit. Or, hey, you could go a little faster if you want to. We're financially okay. But I want to make it a little bit less fuzzy. And I want you to just drill it down for me. When you get a report from Eileen, what are the data points that you need to see to understand the financial health of your company?
I need to know what is the annual recurring run rate revenue for the business. So I need to see, net it out for me with all the contracts that are signed. It's ARR. So I need to know that number. I need to see expenses. So how much expenses have we spent? I need to see revenue. So ARR is the forecasted revenue based on contracts, but then I need to see real revenue because the real revenue tells me cash flow. You know,
that's
I
like
need
cash
to
in the bank, right?
No. Real revenue is so basically. So we've let's just do some basic. We have 100 customers, and those customers pay on a subscription basis. They pay they pay a subscription every month.
Right.
So there's the what is that annualized, and then what does that subscription look like on a monthly basis when you look at cash flow? So
perfect.
Those are the two things that are important to me. The other piece that doesn't come from my lean, that comes from my VP sales, is new business. So I want to see new business bookings. And because that to me is true health. And so, a mentor of mine, said to me when I was doing a lot of reporting on revenue, ARR, because that's a lagging indicator. Show me the new business. So looking at new business bookings on a monthly basis is the real indicator of the health of the business, because when someone signs a contract today, you've got them for at least 12 months. But if you don't sign contracts today, then you don't get that pop in the following months. And the other information that's so critical for me is net churn. And so gross churn and net churn. So we're talking, it's specific to SaaS subscription, but I want to know the percentage of customers that are staying with us every month. And then I want to know the percentage of customers that are leaving. And I want to know the percentage of customers that are growing. Right. So I think what you're seeing is a lot of the key metrics for us in the SaaS business are revenue. And we're looking at revenue in a number of different ways. We're looking at a monthly revenue, annualized revenue, and then we're looking at revenue in the context of the customer base. So you can, get a sense of, because then you can forecast that. Like if you're at an 8 to 10% churn, that tells you that 8% of your customers are going to leave you annually, which isn't bad in a SaaS business. If you're at a 20, 30% churn, you don't have a healthy business. 8 to 10, and then you model the business accordingly. Right, so on a $10 million nut, when you've got $10 million in revenue, when you've got an 8% churn, that means you're going to lose $800,000 a year every year. Right, but that's how you run the business.
Perfect. Woo! Thank you for taking me to school, Eli.
If you run a SaaS
business, that's going to make a lot of sense to you guys. And if you're in the creative services, God bless you. Good luck, because there's so little predictability, but. You do need to know the basics and have visibility on your finances, because this is what we face a lot. Some people are so worried, they have that scarcity mindset that it paralyzes them to do anything. And then later on, I'll sit down with them and realize they could run, their runway is like 6 months. So why are they paralyzed? Go ahead. This is the time to go make some bold moves.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking me to school.
By the way, there's one other number that I didn't say that I think was just implied. Cash in the bank. there's a number, right? Like we're always kind of like, and you see it kind of depending on the time of the year, kind of goes a little lower, goes higher. And so the counterbalance of cash in the bank is accounts receivable, because we're a subscription business. But I didn't want that to go unnoticed.
Eli, thank you very much for coming on our show today and taking everybody along with us to school. And it's been a pleasure, and I hope that our friendship and our professional relationship continues, but most importantly, our friendship. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
It's great. One last plug, Enablement Mastery, if I may.
When does it drop?
January 8, 2019. You can go pre-order it on Amazon right now. I'm super excited. This is an amazing book. It's going to, it's going to make a really big difference in corporations and in the world. So thank you again for inspiring it. Hi, this is Eli Cohen, CEO and co-founder of Saleshood. You are listening to The Future.
This episode of The Future was sponsored by the all-new Chase Inc. Business Unlimited Credit Card. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase, no annual fees, and no minimum balance to redeem rewards, the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited Credit Card is a great choice for busy creative entrepreneurs. For more information, visit chase.com/inc. That's spelled I-N-K. The Future is hosted by me, Chris Doe. The show is edited by Stuart Schuster. Big thanks to Adam Sanborn, who composed our theme song. To subscribe to The Future podcast, check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and now SoundCloud. Make sure you rate and review our episodes. Don't miss out on upcoming events, live streams, workshops, and announcements by going to
thefuture.com and sign up for the newsletter link at the bottom. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Future Is Here. Thanks for listening. That's it for this episode. See you in the future.